Who will survive?
And welcome to the final edition of the Road to Survivor Series podcast, which I suppose could be a little bit of a reformatted title since Survivor Series is technically now in our rearview window as we head towards the month of December. I'm Chris, joined by Rob, and Chris Osborne is once again joining us. Chris, welcome back to the program here.
Thank you very much.
And of course, you are finding this on the Barber's Chair Network and where you can find the Ruthless Aggression podcast, as well as First Black Champ and a wide variety of other podcasts here. And today, for our final edition, we are going to be talking about two Survivor Series that had similar stakes in the sense of, you know, it was all or nothing for both of these teams that took part in these five-on-fives at the end of the show. One show had a little bit more, quote-unquote, weight to it than the other. And we're talking, of course, about Survivor Series 2001 and Survivor Series 2014. Both are choices for the 2000s. Both are remembered, I feel like in the former case in 01, pretty fondly. 2014... probably a one-match show, mostly remembered for the conclusion of it for historical purposes.
They kind of are both one-match shows.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, but 2001 is definitely remembered as the conclusion of the invasion angle. And, yeah, I mean, you won't remember much of the other match that happened that night, but I feel like just from a legacy perspective, like,
yeah.
One show carries a lot of meaning to it versus the other.
Well, you know, and I mean, we did obviously Undertaker's debut in the first Bret Shawn match, and then we did, you know, the first Bret Austin match and Rock's debut, mm-hmm. and then, you know, 1998 obviously stands out. It was time that we did two actual, you know, memorable, good five-on-five matches, because at the end of the day, that's what Survivor Series is all about. But yeah, I guess we can get right into 2001. You know, we don't have a ton of background information from the Observer or whatever, because there's really not much going on. I mean, you know, WWF's the only game in town at this point. TNA doesn't exist yet.
Nope.
It's just kind of this weird holding pattern. But I think we start off, you know, kind of talking about the invasion in general, because it's kind of a blind spot for me. I want to go back and watch, I think, 2000, 2001 WWF at some point. But, you know, obviously I know the invasion wasn't great because the big WCW guys basically were just making more money to sit at home. I mean, they guaranteed contracts through, I know Flair's was through 2003, mm-hmm. which they would ultimately buy out. Goldberg's is through 2002, I think. So all these guys, you know, if Vince wasn't going to pay them however much more than they were already making from Time Warner, which he wasn't going to, they weren't going to come in. So your invasion's left with guys like Lance Storm and, you know, Justin Credible and
yeah,
Sean O'Hare. I mean,
well, and Chris, I'll send it off to you in just a sec. But Rob, if you're doing the watch, because you never, like you said, this is a blind spot for you because you've never actually, you've seen some 2001 pay-per-views, including X7, of course.
I think that's about it, though. I mean,
that's my point. You've seen that. You may have caught some stuff from the year 2000. I know you watched Backlash 2000 as well.
But it's not the Attitude Era.
No, it's not. But what I'm trying to say here is, if you're going to do that watch, I would actually suggest you start from, coincidentally enough, Survivor Series 1999. Because that event, I think, tees up everything that happens in the year 2000 and forward for the company, just from the perspective of, okay, it's Kurt Angle's debut. It's the night that Austin gets run down. The main event goes on as it is. You need to watch, and you need to watch everything as it happens, because that also, you know, it was during that time that, you know, Test and Stephanie were to be married. But we all know what happened there. And then the Love Her or Leave Her match happened at Armageddon, which sets up the heel turn, which sets up the McMahon-Helmsley regime,
yeah.
Which also, and I caught this as well, what in a rewatch that I did a couple of years ago when all the 2000 and 1999 Raws and SmackDowns came on, it also is when in that pocket, that November-December pocket of 99, it's also when the relationship between Kurt Angle and Stephanie started to, you know, take shape. Their first little seeds were planted for what would happen later on in the summer. So my suggestion to you would be, when you do this, start there and go on from there, because that's going to give you the biggest opportunity to understand and know everything that is going on.
Yeah.
And so, Chris, since we haven't heard from you, like Rob said, and I know you had said this was your wheelhouse event. This is one of the events that you grew up watching a lot. So the 5-on-5s were significant. Yeah.
Yeah, I love the 5-on-5s. And this was actually towards the tail end of when I stopped watching the first time. So I was like a hardcore fan pretty much since I was like 5. So like 1994, 5. Like I would watch it every week. And then this would happen. And then I think I stopped around 7th grade, which would put it like 2002. So this is like one of the last things that I actually watched fully through as a fan and didn't have to go back and watch when the network came. But like like you guys said, especially like the WCW talent, the ECW talent at the time, like they are ravaged. There's nothing close to a top star. I mean, Booker T is like the only guy that you could consider a top guy. Cause I mean, what they did with DDP, I thought was pretty bad too.
I was a big
DDP fan in WCW.
Yes.
And I really wish we would have had, like, I think it would have probably been a really bad match, but if we would have got the People's Champ versus the People's Champ, The Rock versus DDP, like, I think that would have been a pretty good start to actually show that WCW, you know, has somebody that could be up there. But there was no, I mean, just looking at the card, and not to get too far ahead of myself, but like, these guys have all worked for WWF. Like, the WCW guys that win or whatnot, like, they're pretty much all WWF guys.
And honestly, like, a lot of it was crap. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the wrestlers that they brought over, you know, they weren't the big names, and obviously that, you know, sunk some interest in it. But that being said, the crowd, every time they wanted something like this to happen. Every time. I mean, at King of the Ring, when Booker T showed up for, I think, the first time, and, you know, he did what he did that night, the crowd at the Continental Airlines Arena went nuts. Mm-hmm. For the DDP reveal, it was a stupid angle, but he was stupidly over. The one night when, you know, Paul Heyman announced that ECW was going to be in the mix here, they did that turn beautifully. Beautifully. That was beautifully done, and everything, you know, it was taking shape, and it actually looked like, and also the nights that, you know, they invaded the garden, they invaded this, you know, the hallowed halls of Madison Square Garden that WCW had never been to. They made that the hugest deal in the world, and it seemed like the most important thing that you know, going on. But it really all just tanked when Stephanie was the, you know, consortium or whatever for ECW. Like, when they turned it into just another McMahon family drama, it just sucked.
Yeah.
And it took the wind out of the sails of what was, you know, something that the fans desperately wanted to see.
Well, and here's my thing is, you know, maybe you're not going to throw money at Goldberg and Sting and Hogan and Flair. You know, that's probably a lot of money to throw to those guys that can convince them to just not get paid to stay home. But you gotta get one of them.
Could you have okay.
Yeah.
Here's a good question. You said you can get one of them. Okay. Let's say you can't. I don't know what he was doing at the time. What about Bischoff? I know they were a year away from being a year away from doing that, but like,
If you get
Bischoff in there, like,
if you're telling me Bischoff, if it's Bischoff and Heyman leading it instead of Stephanie and Shane, because that's another, the McMahon family drama I was very much over, because I mean, you just had it at WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah.
You had the McMahon in every corner. So we're just now following it up with another
and you,
big McMahon family angle again.
Yeah, and you had Shane buying WCW, and you had him facing Vince at WrestleMania. Like, this is still very fresh in everyone's minds.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know Bischoff, you know, was obviously trying to buy WCW before Vince kind of swooped in, so you know, probably not over hard feelings there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean...
I don't think even one person helps. I don't think one person helps. Like, even if you put, like, who do you think would have been the biggest difference maker that could have made any progress in the story?
Shit. I mean, I don't think it.
Because one person doesn't work. Maybe two. Like, yeah, one person I just don't think adds enough.
Yeah, I don't think you can't really get away with just one.
If it's Hogan.
Oh, here. I don't, because I know that this might have been teased, but what if you get one person, one additional person, and Triple H is healthy?
Yeah.
Then what?
That's yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
Probably.
If Triple H
is healthy, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, you know, we kind of saw what happened with Goldberg and Steiner when they came in anyway, so would it have really mattered?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only person...
Well, Steiner would have at least probably been a little bit less blown up than he was at that point in time. He was done.
But
was cooked.
But was the invasion ever going to be anything other than, you know, you, we won?
No, it definitely wasn't going to be anything but besides that. No, I do think that that's true. But I think that also it probably would have suffered under the weight of enormous expectations, but the expectations were astronomically high in that era anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean.
It just was what it was. And, you know, they obviously suffered also because of the ill-fated, you know, like 1 hour of WCW that they had on SmackDown that one time at the Tacoma Dome.
Right.
Just one of the. One of the, you know,
more let's put them in a market that WCW doesn't go to, really.
you couldn't just do it in Atlanta or something like that, or somewhere in the
they
South.
They were in Atlanta, I think. They were in Atlanta like the next week or something.
Yeah,
like 2 weeks or like 2 weeks later, they were in the South.
They were because on the invasion, something to wrestle. I remember, you know, Bruce defending it, saying it didn't matter.
Oh, they were in Birmingham.
Yeah,
you could have done it in Birmingham. Come on.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're in Birmingham. They hit up Boston and for Nitro in 1997. I just watched an episode of them. That's where Kevin Sullivan is from.
Yeah.
You know, they did DC. They ran DC. They didn't run LA all the time, but you know they were there. They could have done it somewhere else. Detroit, Denver. You pick Tacoma.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
No, but
also, wait. I'm trying to understand why they were at the Garden that week and then all the way out in Tacoma and then Birmingham and then Boston. What the hell was their schedule back then?
Well, and we'll get into that a little bit later, too, because they advertised some of the house shows during this pay-per-view. And
also, yeah, one of my favorite recurring bits from that era also that they advertised, too.
Yes. But, okay, so leading up to Survivor Series, we do have a couple observer notes. Much of the news internally is chaotic, with plans being made on the fly and foundation of the product being destroyed with mistakes that shouldn't be made because of lessons that should have been learned from WCW. Basically, Dave's going on about how, you know, WWF's the only game in town. Business is dying. Very similar to, you know, current Dave. But then he goes on to talk about how, you know, they're not drawing the fans that they were drawing or whatever. And it's like, it's the fall of 2001, man. People were kind of focused on other stuff.
Yeah.
Significantly.
Yeah, I read part of his like summarizing that, you know, because the Garden didn't sell out for like the first time in 18 shows or something. I'm just like, this is like right after 9/11. Like, yeah. I don't know if I'd want to be in a big place in New York at any point for a while.
No, exactly. And so he kind of goes on about that. And kind of goes on about how the WWE or the WCW guys weren't really presented as stars, which, you know,
yeah,
kind
of
true.
None of them were stars.
Well, yes,
that's part of the issue as well.
Yeah, the only ones that were stars were Booker T and DDP, but DDP, you know, by that point, I don't want to say he lost a lot of his luster, but they didn't present him right, and still,
yeah.
What about having the Radicals here? Because, I mean, they were all signed by now.
Well, the problem
Eddie was in between runs. But
the other problem was Eddie was in between runs. Saturn, by that point,
wore out his welcome.
And Benoit was hurt.
I think Malenko was done by then.
And Malenko was Malenko was pretty cooked by then, too. But the thing that they were doing before, we're saying that Benoit and Jericho were going to defect to WCW. But the problem with that, of course, is the fact that they left WCW for the WWF for very valid reasons.
Yeah.
So you can have them and you can have them in the attachment, but it does fall short in the one thing, the logic department.
Yeah.
You can get away with that for the guys who jumped ship from the Federation to WCW. It doesn't work when they were jumping off the Titanic of WCW to go to the WWF.
Yeah. I do want to get in.
But that was a thing. So I do like where your mind is at. That was a thing, though. That they were speculating that was going to happen. In fact, it was up to – I believe it might have been up to King of the Ring that was speculated, because I think Austin had faced Benoit and Jericho in a triple threat match for the title. It was either at Judgment Day or at King of the Ring that happened, if I recall correctly.
Let me look that up. So I do want to address Paul Heyman's promo on the Go Home SmackDown.
Yes, it's incredible.
It is.
It's probably better than the pipe bomb.
I made sure to seek it out. You know, Heyman calls Vince out to the ring and says that WWF will die Sunday, but it's not Heyman's fault. Heyman wasn't the one that ruined everything. Vince has lost his mind. He doesn't have it anymore. His ideas are antiquated. Heyman says Vince took Hulk Hogan's blood and built Titan Towers, stole Bret Hart's dream, and bought an airplane with WWF on it, took the company public, made himself a millionaire. Vince's dad said that he would never work against other promoters when his dad died, and Vince immediately did that. But Heyman says he doesn't even care about people like Sam Mushnick or Jim Crockett. He cares about himself, which, you know, he's stuck with the Paul Heyman stuff here, which is good. Stone Cold was drinking his first beer in ECW while Bobby Heenan and Gene Okerlund were dancing around. ECW was producing edgy TV that Vince would take and call Attitude. Vince stole it all from Heyman, and Heyman should be the one here now. Even made Taz a commentator. And then eventually Taz gets in the ring and chokes Heyman out. And it's a good way to go about that segment.
Yeah. I mean,
you know.
There's nothing that Taz could have done. He was hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously could have handled things better after he choked out Angle in 2000, but, you know.
Yeah, no, this set it up very well, though. I mean, you know, they did a real good job with this, I think. And, I mean, it got me ready for the pay-per-view, if nothing else. So, I guess we can get into it here.
Indeed, we can.
Really good intro video. We're going to...
Is that the first of that we heard the end, or was the second time?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because I can't remember if it was used in Armageddon 99.
I think it was, but...
Probably was.
Yeah, they brought Freddie Blassie for that, which he's in the X7 one as well, right? Yeah. So we'll drop that in real quick.
Vince McMahon Sr. certainly is a legend. As far as our sport is concerned,
you came to me in a dream last night.
Welcome to WrestleMania!
You were standing in a brilliant light.
This is Wrestlemania 68,000 here to the sky.
One minute here, but the next you were gone. I thought you could stay, but I was so wrong.
This most serious threat World Wrestling Federation has ever known.
If we don't pull it together,
I will see all of you
in hell.
There is no next year.
There is no tomorrow.
Shane and I just couldn't wait for you to die.
Winner take all.
Indomitable
W.
He's been at the side door.
Rumble come back. Jim Ross and Paul Heyman are on commentary. And whoever wins the main event controls the company. So pretty big night. But
it is.
Before that, we have some other matches. Starting with Christian against Al Snow for the European title.
Which is...
Just a strange opener.
Yeah, it's a very strange opener.
Yeah, it was all right. They had some really weird, like, rope break moments. Like,
yeah.
Christian's arm and stuff was under the rope. But then they still counted, and then he had to get his foot up on the rope. It's just like, some of these ref stuff, I don't know.
Also, I like how Christian said they were in South Carolina.
No, that was good. It's a little weird that Christian's with the Alliance when he never really worked in WCW.
Well, see, this was the issue. This was also the issue with the storyline, is the fact that they made the Alliance the heels, so they made the heel WWF guys go over there to try and get them heat. It's like, that doesn't work.
At least with Austin, it makes sense, though. Or
no, of course. Yeah, I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying.
I mean, Austin against McMahon, it's definitely against Vince. But I mean, you could have had Al Snow on the Alliance. I mean, that would have made perfect sense instead. Mm-hmm.
Teddy Long was the ref. That was fun.
It was, yes.
I didn't even notice.
Christian hit the Unprettier for the win. I mean, it was fine. It was a weird opener. Probably not what I would have had open, but... Stone Cold shows up, and Stephanie is mad that they haven't heard from him. Is he with them or against them? Austin says he's with them. That's another thing. On the shows leading up to this, Vince had been kind of teasing that Austin would be with them or that someone would be jumping, and we'll see. Kurt Angle says maybe he should be the leader, and so does Rob Van Dam. Austin says neither of them should be the leader.
Yeah. So, move on. Vince told Linda that she cannot have it both ways and that she's either with him or with their kids. Vince told her that someone might get hurt and shit happens. And Michael Cole came up, eavesdropped on them and interviewed them. Vince said that he's taking a risk. He's built an empire on taking risks. And he always has an ace in the hole. He has 16 members tonight and the Alliance has 4. Obviously, everyone is still speculating that it's Stone Cold. William Regal came out then and said that he is not buying into Vince's hogwash or his mind games, and that Stone Cold is loyal to them.
Yes.
Who to believe? Who to trust? And then we have, speaking of, William Regal going out there to face Tajiri. He won quickly. The Alliance now has 2 wins. And then Regal got his nose broken, and he beat up Tajiri more after the match. And then Tori Wilson came in, and then she was promptly attacked.
Our matchup between future Raw Tag Champions.
Yes.
Yeah. I like how they mentioned, they said that JR said Regal brought Tajiri to the WWF, but then Heyman chimes in right away and says, well, he brought Tajiri to the US when he brought him into ECW.
Oh, yeah. Then we get another title unification match, Edge against Test. Coach interviews Edge before the match. Says that if Edge and WWF both lose, Edge will no longer have a job. But if Edge wins, then it doesn't matter because he'll be a champion.
Yeah. He'll
have a job either way.
He also made fun of Test's really dumb voice. Also, there was a segment. I'm just going to call it a segment between Stacy and Test before this match that happened.
Yeah. They really kept this Stacy and Test thing going for
a while. long-term booking.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Edge against Test... It was pretty fun. You know, they traded finishers, and Edge rolled through on a powerbomb, and the titles are unified.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I really enjoyed this match.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I was surprised at how many, how long the ending went. Like, I thought they went really long on the ending to get all the reversals and stuff, and it worked. They kept me entertained.
Yeah. And in a few months, neither of these titles will exist anyway for some months.
Well, a few months, it's almost a year. I feel you, though, but
go back and listen to our earlier shows where they don't have mid-card titles in this company.
Jesus. Well, at least SmackDown was watchable.
Well, yeah.
At that point, Raw is... Ugh.
Raw when Austin leaves and Bradshaw and Bubba are the top second and third baby faces. Yeah.
What a brutal time.
It was bad.
What a brutal, brutal time.
Kurt Angle's talking to Stephanie McMahon. She's freaking out because if the Alliance loses, she'll be a regular person and not a rich person.
Yes, and also Angle drops a line here that is very important for the future because he says that he's going to do everything he can. I think I'm paraphrasing here. He's going to do everything that he can to make sure that Austin is not the one to turn on the Alliance.
Yes.
Hmm. Fact check. True.
Yes. And then we go to the Hardys against the Dudleys in a tag title unification cage match.
They had a backstage segment first, and I don't know why, but for some reason, Matt's title doesn't have the red lettering, and it just bugged me. I don't know why it was, but Jeff's right next to him and it's perfect, and then Matt's doesn't have the lettering. Like, something must have got knocked off of it.
They had a backstage segment here, and I believe it was Trish who left the room first.
Yeah.
And then Lita was talking to Jeff about how Matt's been acting weird, and then they were arguing or whatever, and then they left,
Trish comes out last.
Oh yeah, Trish came out last. And then I don't know if put the pieces together there. It was like, I see what you're trying to do there and what you're trying to imply.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, eventually they had the Jeff and Trish stuff to try and get Jeff, you know, some direction before he leaves. So more long-term booking.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman asks why Jeff has blue hair. JR asks why Paul Heyman doesn't have any hair. That was good. I enjoyed that. The Dudleys busted out a Doomsday device.
They did.
Fun to see.
Yeah.
They did.
Stacy brings a table into the cage after stealing the key from Nick Patrick. Just very bad at his job.
Always and forever.
Always.
So Matt Hardy escapes the cage, and they don't win.
Because they need both of them to escape the cage.
There's no advantage to escaping the cage, then. I know.
No. Matt's an idiot. Matt just looks like an idiot.
Yeah. Because now it's a handicap match. Well, okay, you're one step closer to winning, but...
Well, to be fair to the end of this, yeah, there's no real advantage, but all Jeff has to do is just escape the cage. But he doesn't because he's an idiot and he's consumed by the thrill.
And that's
takes one of the dumbest bumps I think I've ever seen.
With
Jeff Hardy taking a dumb bump. Wow.
Well, it's not the
take a drink
Jeff Hardy has taken in shows that we've watched this week. So since he almost broke his
neck. I was just going to say, how do you rank this between this and Monday?
Which is not his fault. The stairs shouldn't have been there, but
no, they should not have.
He almost got messed up.
Yeah.
So he's on the top of the cage and just swanton through the table, but D-Von moves and then pins him. So the Dudleys are the tag champs.
They are.
I mean,
I like the match. It was weird though. They started it. They wanted to do like a traditional tag in the cage, like do actual tags. Like, what the hell are you doing? So I'm glad they finally ditched that.
Yeah, seriously. Like, that was just weird.
And didn't they do this finish in a match in their last run with Matt and Jeff? Like, I forget who it was against, but I feel like they did it on a pay-per-view or something, too.
Yeah.
I think they did. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I remember Matt saying, like, you know, telling him to come down and he just dived and missed again.
Yeah, probably if it was a cage match, it probably would have happened at an Extreme Rules event or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they maybe against like the bar or something.
Yeah, that sounds about right now. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, kind of like we talked about earlier, they preview the upcoming live event loop. They go to Charlotte, which
for
is
Raw.
Instead. They're in Greensboro.
That's for Raw, yep.
And they go down to Fayetteville.
I like how they always, I never picked up on this until later on, but they always said they're Tuesday. They're taking over so and so. They're going to Fayetteville. It's like, oh, that's where SmackDown is.
Yeah.
But they never actually say that SmackDown is happening on that Tuesday. It's like they didn't want people to know that it was taped on a Tuesday and then aired on a Thursday.
Well, they've always been kind of weird about that.
I know, but it's so weird. Like looking back, like, oh, why don't you just say that it's SmackDown and not a live event? Why are you not trying to get more people to go?
Well, even earlier this year, they didn't want to say anything was taped when they were doing the tape show. Was it the
performance? Because you could tell because it wasn't saying, they didn't say live.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Okay, so go Charlotte to Fayetteville, then they have a break, then they pick back up in Daytona, then they go to Philadelphia, and then Tulsa, and then Oklahoma City.
And then Wichita for SmackDown.
Yeah, so I guess they probably had two house show groups, and it probably makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because one goes from Daytona to Tulsa, but it's still, you're all over the place.
Just a different time.
Mick Foley's at WWF The World, which isn't going to exist for too much longer.
No, it is.
Oh, yeah, it does.
At least another year or so.
Also, Mick Foley's last day in the company, pretty much.
Yeah.
Quite a few years.
Till 03, till he comes back for Bad Blood.
Said he's not in the building because Vince said he had to be at WWF The World. So he's pulling for WWF, but they have a lot of problems. And if they win, he has some words for Vince.
You know? Fair enough. Fair enough. So, and then backstage, Test beat up Scotty Too Hotty and took his spot in the Immunity Battle Royal, which is to say, damn, Scotty, you're not incapacitated. Get up and fight back.
Yeah, you know.
It's just kind of funny. Like, couldn't he just go and take it?
Scotty figured he would be okay, and he was right.
He was right. Yeah. I'm just saying, show some fight, man. It's your job. And also, again, like, he's not, like, injured. He just got beat up in the hallway.
Yeah. So the Immunity Battle Royal. The winner can't be fired for 1 year.
And then you look at the list, and it's like Bradshaw, Farouk, Lance Storm, DDP, Billy Kidman, Albert, Taz, Raven, Chuck Palumbo, who also Taz came out later on and scared the crap out of Heyman, which is funny as hell.
Yeah.
Crash Holly, Justin Incredible, Sean Stasiak, Steven Richards, Tommy Dreamer, Hurricane, Spike Dudley, Humorous, Chavo Guerrero, Funaki, Billy Gunn, and Test. Most of these people end up staying for a while anyway.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny.
I think it's DDP's not there for another year.
Yeah.
Sean Stasiak's not there. I think it's just Saturn and Raven that of the group that aren't there for another year.
So, mm-hmm.
You know. Test gets the win, though, so he gets to keep his job for a year and won't really do anything with it.
Works
the Undertaker at SummerSlam.
Works the Undertaker at SummerSlam, and then they do the whole testicles deal.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
Do you not like Test?
I have never seen the big draw about Test, no.
Well, you need
Everyone's like, watch this match at King of the Ring against Brock. And I'm like, it's fine.
You didn't see the big draw on Test, neither did anybody else in the crowd, so it's okay.
I didn't honestly mind him.
I mean, maybe...
If you watch 99, 2000, you may like him a bit more.
Yeah, again, because when
maybe marginally.
When I picked up watching was like the fall of 2002.
That's fair. So that's fair. That's fair. But I think his ECW run was fun.
Yeah, that's true.
Ended, albeit tragically, but it was fun.
Best part of this match was the Alliance theme song was Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. Yes.
God. That song has scarred me from hearing it in every freaking highlight tape on YouTube over the years.
We move on to the Women's Championship Six-Pack Challenge. Trish, Lita, Jackie, Ivory, Molly, and Jazz, who's making her debut.
As William Regal's ace in the hole, and I think this was a nice debut for Jazz. And, you know, Paul Heyman obviously marked out on commentary for this. This was decent for a women's match in 2001. I think that everyone obviously was trying really hard in this match. That was evident. And, I mean, to be honest with you, if you look at this group, you couldn't really, you know, pick six better workers at the time. So credit to them for not – I don't want to be mean here, but credit to them for not putting someone like Stacy in there or Tori. They put the best workers that they had in the division in the match. They did what they could, and you know, it had a nice outcome with Trish winning the women's title for the first time.
Yeah, it was an okay match. It was good, especially for the time. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
I just felt bad for Jazz though, because nobody in that arena knew who she was.
No.
Or cared. And the music was terrible too.
Oh, it was awful.
It's like so bad. So you just like, I mean, without Heyman being on commentary, if Heyman wasn't on commentary, you could have just like written her off because there was no reason to. But luckily Heyman sort of saved her. And then she also came in very good, very strong, taking down Lita for
yes.
So
Yeah, and I mean her music ends up being pretty good.
It does.
They had that there.
It does.
Would have been a little bit better.
Like
Yeah.
Well, because What I'm wondering is, I wonder if would there have been a better spot for her to debut where the crowd would have obviously known her, i.e., do they go to... do you hold off and you try and debut her at Raw at the Garden on the 7th of January?
No, because that's Triple H.
I mean, it's Triple H, but it's still a big deal. They still did some things that night.
It was fine for what it was.
I'm saying just from the perspective of, okay, can they go to somewhere where they're going to know who this person is?
Honestly, in 2001, I don't think anybody was really going to know Jazz. I mean, unless you had to have been on the East Coast.
That's what I'm saying.
Up in that area. Yeah.
If you were there, you would have known.
Outside of the ECW arena, I don't know if there would have been much.
Yeah, that's the problem. And unfortunately, from the looks of it, they go for Raw, OKC, Milwaukee, Anaheim, Lafayette, Louisiana, and Miami.
Yeah.
So New York pretty much would have been the only real place.
You hold off, what's the point? So she gets like a 25% better reaction? I mean, you're not getting like a blow the roof.
Yeah. If you're not getting a blow the roof off pop, you're probably getting a decent pop somewhere else.
Yeah, but
the ECW fans would have known.
It's the women's division in 2001.
Okay, yes, but you would have definitely gotten at least a palpable reaction.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at it from the perspective of, could you have done better for her?
She ends up being fine. She wins the title.
Of course she does. I'm not saying that she didn't do fine. I'm posting the question, was there anywhere New York is really the only spot that they could have done something with. And the crowds obviously were rowdy as hell back then anyway. So,
yeah.
I mean, they were always rowdy in ECW areas. I mean, I was watching a Nitro the other day from 97 when they were in Philly. Public Enemy got one of the biggest pops of the night. Mm-hmm. And they elicited ECW chants.
Yeah.
Jazz probably could have in 2002. Or 2001. Are you kidding me? They went to an area where she would have been known? Yeah.
We go backstage where Vince is with his team, which... pretty much Suicide Squad. It's a bunch of guys who have had issues with him before that he kind of aligned with anyway and brought them all together. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Can I just say just one thing here? The Rock bouncing up and down is incredibly distracting.
Yeah.
He does that the entire time. And I'm just wondering to myself, what is going on in his head at this point?
He's got to get loose.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious. He goes the entire time bouncing while everyone else is just standing still.
Yeah. Ben says if they lose tonight, there's not a single WWF fan that would forgive them. They'd be personally and professionally disgraced. Said that they would never work anywhere ever again. I mean, only one of them works for another company after this, and it's Jericho 15 years later. So, you know,
yeah.
He had a point, yeah, sure. I guess.
Got a point.
Not to say TNA wouldn't have jumped at the chance to have Kane or the Big Show at any point, but, you know.
He's got a point, Sting.
It's time for the winner-take-all Survivor Series elimination match in Booker T, Shane McMahon, Rob Van Dam, Kurt Angle, and Steve Austin. It's Undertaker, Kane, Big Show, Rock, and Chris Jericho. And they start off with Rock and Austin, and they just start brawling right away.
And, Shane is being an annoying jackass. He breaks up like every pin.
Yeah.
Every pin. Jokes in. Boom.
Angle busts out an angle slam on Big Show, which is always pretty impressive because Big Show is gigantic.
Yep.
Yeah. And then Booker and RVD hit their finishers on Big Show.
Shane hits the elbow drop on him and,
yep.
And gets the pin. And then... I get that, like, it's not a babyface thing to break up pins, but they just kind of stand and watch Big Show get pinned.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Like,
do they just, like, expect him to do it to break it up because he's the Big Show?
I guess so, but, you know, you watch the Alliance break up all these pins and just stand there. And,
yeah, it's really weird.
I don't know. Kane chokeslams Shane McMahon, Undertaker tombstones him, and Jericho Lion salts him, and they get the pin there, so they even it up real quick. See, this time, Undertaker kind of got in the corner of the Alliance so they wouldn't come in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, at least do that.
That's a nice thing,
yeah.
At least. But RVD kicks Kane from the top rope and pins him real quick.
That is not how we treat our future tag team partners, Rob.
That's true. Austin hits Undertaker with a stunner and drags Kurt Angle over for the cover, and the Alliance is up 4-2.
They are. So it's not great, especially because now you have the dysfunctional Rock and Jericho leading the charge here.
Yeah.
But Rock is able to throw Booker off of Angle on the apron, And as RVD and Austin are checking in on him, Rock rolls Booker T up and gets the 1-2-3. So now it's down to 3-2. And then Jericho hit the flashback on RVD. I believe that was the flashback. Sort of skull-crushing finale.
Yeah, I put skull-crushing finale.
so did I.
I believe Jericho called it the flashback, though. It was one of my favorite moves to use on SmackDown, Shut Your Mouth. He made it 2-2. So now we have Austin and Angle versus Jericho Rock, which was also the main event on the Go Home SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
So again, something that they were just explicitly telling you.
Yep. Rock put Angle in his very bad sharpshooter.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
And Angle tapped, and Team WWF has a 2-1 lead.
They so, do.
Look at that.
They do.
Jericho rolls up Austin, but Austin rolls through it, and we're down to Rock and Austin. And as Jericho's going to leave, he hits another skull-crushing finale, this time on The Rock.
He does. So Jericho is miffed.
Yeah. Austin goes for the cover, but Rock kicks out at 2. Austin puts Rock in his very bad sharpshooter.
Yes.
We're doing too many sharpshooters. Just a Survivor Series thing. Yeah.
Gotta keep Montreal in the forefront of everybody's mind, especially in this match.
Yeah. We definitely don't have any other things to be reminded of here.
Rock gets to the ropes and puts Austin in his sharpshooter. Austin gets the ropes, but Rock drags him away. Then he gets the ropes again. Rock hits Austin with a stunner. Goes to the cover. Nick Patrick pulls Earl Hebner out of the ring, and then Austin hits Rock with a rock bottom.
Do we need J.J. Dillon to put him on probation again? The only way he's going to learn his lesson so that he can yell at Mr. Wall Street.
I did like Rock and Austin stealing each other's finishers.
Yes.
It was like WrestleMania 19.
Yes.
Austin takes out Nick Patrick and gets Earl Hebner back in the ring. And Earl takes a ref bump immediately. Then Austin hits a stunner. There's no ref.
And then Angle runs down. What's he going to do? Oh, he hits Austin with the title. Waffles him. He's down. Rock hits the rock bottom. And Team WWF wins.
So that ends this storyline.
It ends the storyline. Yeah. And, you know, this is one of the best 5-on-5 matches ever.
Yeah, I think it's, this one, 2014, the one from a couple years ago with Shane was very good.
Mm-hmm. It's 2016. Yeah.
2016.
Yeah, 2016 was phenomenal. The 5-on-5-on-5 match last year was great.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Team Austin against Team Bischoff, we talked about.
Yes.
Last year.
Yes. Obviously. Great, great match.
Yeah.
Great match.
But it's definitely
on the 05 one that we're going to watch next year is going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's definitely the template to run the next decades worth of them. You know, they definitely have gotten pretty darn close to perfection on running these now.
Yeah.
Going forward. And I love that the ending shot, of course, is, oh, it's going to end on Vince just being in triumph, like with his fist pumping.
we have a couple more observer notes from the Survivor Series recap. WWF reset its entire promotion this past week, plus brought back Ric Flair and Jerry Lawler, which they did that on the next Raw.
They did.
Flair comes out as Vince is about to give Austin the world title. And Ric Flair says he's co-owner of the WWF now. And it's good that they brought him back in Charlotte. You know, obviously that's what they had to do. Yeah, we talked earlier about how his contract went through 2003 or whatever, and they finally realized they had to do it. And then Lawler had left earlier in the year because he chose Stacy Carter over the company, and that backfired.
Imagine that.
Much. Yeah. Pretty quickly.
Shocking.
But, you know, there was an opening. Paul Heyman is out, at least from an on-screen
standpoint. Yeah, from an on-screen. Yeah.
You know, goes back to creative for a little bit.
But he'll be back.
Yeah.
He'll be back in a couple months. He'll be back.
And he'll keep doing this thing where he's back for a couple years and goes away.
Yep.
And then comes back. And
yeah, just, you know.
Until this very day.
Yeah.
The Alliance vs. WWF feud was ditched at Survivor Series after being perhaps the biggest disappointment in recent wrestling history, where WWF won in a confusing series of events. Yeah, I mean, you know, Dave was right. It wasn't all that good.
Yeah.
But, and then on December 10th.
But it,
oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just from like a historical purpose, though, like these inter-promotional feuds never work. Like, you know, the Alliance versus WWF, you had, you know, they used to do like AWA and Memphis would go and have like try to do pay-per-views together and stuff. Like, it just doesn't work. Like, I don't remember any time that it's worked, even when when two separate companies were trying to work together, let alone one trying to book their own. Like, it doesn't work.
The companies where it will actually work would never do it either. Like, if you do WWE against AEW right now, there's some intrigue there. Or you do like WWE against New Japan. There's some stuff.
I mean, I could see AEW trying AEW and New Japan.
Yeah.
I think that could eventually work.
Yeah. Even though you've seen a lot of those matches already.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah. There's not really any appeal.
Yeah.
Very few and far between is, yeah.
December 10th, the World Wrestling Federation has set another target date to split into two rival promotions, this time being January 7th, the date of a live Raw at Madison Square Garden, which doesn't happen that day.
Doesn't happen that day.
Happens a couple months later. That's when Triple H comes back.
Yep.
The plan seems to be the same as it always was. Two different companies, one Raw, one SmackDown, one led by The Rock, the other led by Steve Austin. That part's all true. Only lasts for like 3 months.
Yeah.
Because they both leave.
They both do leave, yeah.
You know, one leaves.
Comes back.
Terms, and yeah, one then leaves. On bad terms.
Yeah, exactly.
One owned by Vince McMahon, the other owned by Ric Flair. They do stick with that for a little bit until they bring Bischoff in. So,
and Stephanie again.
You know, it all comes to fruition ultimately, but not till March.
Exactly.
And yeah, that's about it for Survivor Series 2001. We can jump into 2014.
Yeah, once again, we're back in St. Louis. This is an event that you and I went to, Rob.
We did.
The second Survivor Series that we had gone to in 3 years, the third one that I had gone to in 4 years. And no, I did not go to that shit show in Boston the year before. Mm-hmm. I went to the 2011 one at the Garden, which was newly renovated at the time, and it was fantastic. It was the night that Vince Young led Eagles beat the Giants, I believe, and the night that Jay Cutler got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Because you texted me, you were sad as hell because he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then you had to watch Tyler Palco beat the Bears a couple weeks later.
Yeah, that was the year that the Bears lost to the entire AFC, or they beat the Chargers, and that's when Cutler got hurt, and then they lost to Tyler Palco.
They lost to Tebow.
They lost to Tebow, and then they lost a game where Sebastian Janikowski hit like 7 field goals.
Yeah.
That's how they lost the rest of the AFC West. Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah, so what immediately stood out to me is that they had pyro still at this point, and I was at this show.
Yeah.
I don't remember there being pyro.
And it's funny because 5 months previously, we were at Payback and they didn't have pyro that night.
Mm-hmm.
And we were
where were you guys sitting at the show?
We were actually pretty close, but we weren't on. We were on the hard camera side.
Okay.
We were way closer to the stage than we were ring.
The top of the
ring.
Much,
yeah,
you know, like the where top it goes of the back.
Yeah, yeah, where it's all like dark and whatnot
over there.
Okay,
that's pretty good. I didn't see us.
Because it was impossible because of the lighting.
Yeah,
the lighting made it absolutely impossible to see anybody over there.
Yeah,
but we were there.
So Vince opens the show.
Can I note one thing? I watched the pre-show for this, and I don't know why or who approved of this, but Cesaro comes out there touting that Switzerland was neutral in World War II, like that's some big thing to stand on. And then Zeb Coulter calls out Switzerland for hiding Nazi gold. Like, what are we doing?
I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
No, I only remember Barrett from the pre-show.
Oh,
I remember the Fandango match too.
Oh yeah, I didn't even mention the Fandango match, but yeah, I forgot to even write it down. But that's what stood out to me. I was like, why are we talking about Nazis on the pre-show? This is going out to everybody.
I think, and
Jesus,
this was also the first time they were like, get your first month of the WWE Network free. As well.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people watching their first pay-per-view talking about Nazi gold.
Yeah.
Um,
oh
Okay.
All right. That was all I had to say, but I was like, I could not believe this happened.
So Vince opened the show, and I had never seen Vince before.
You had never seen Vince before at this point. So
welcome to Survivor Series. This will be a Survivor Series that we will never forget. True.
For right and wrong reasons.
Brings out Stephanie and Triple H. Stephanie says they won't let him down and starts a Vince chant. John Cena comes out, wants to know if the Authority will leave quietly when they lose. Triple H says when Team Cena loses, they're all going to be fired and they won't be able to work anywhere. So a lot like the 2001 stuff.
Yeah.
Also a lot like the 2020 election.
No, well, yes. that as well. Stephanie says even if they lose, they'll still be running the show. They'll just be calling the shots from a boardroom in Connecticut instead of in person every week. And Vince says that they won't, because if they lose, John Cena is the only person who can bring them back, which he does like 6 weeks later. We'll get
you said it was like the 2020 election, except I don't know if there's anybody going to be playing the role of Seth Rollins stepping on Edge's neck, threatening to break it.
Jesus.
It was one of the funniest things ever. It shouldn't have been funny, because Edge's neck was, you know, like torn to bits at that point.
Yeah.
But it was funny as hell.
We open with quite the assortment of people in this tag match. The Usos.
I just have one thing to ask. Why did we start with a 20-minute Raw promo to begin the show?
This was like No Mercy 07. Where they started off promo with the coronation. It's like, what are we doing here?
You're like, hey, you know, you get the show for free, so
so you should treat it like it's Raw.
Yeah, that's what I noticed while I was watching too. I'm like, this is basically a Raw opening from any of the past 8 years.
Yeah, exactly.
This time, so we got the Usos in full face paint and doing their haka dance. We got Miz and Damian Mizdow. We got Los Matadores with El Torito. And we got Gold and Stardust.
Wow.
First of all, I had forgotten how, you know, it freaked me out. I was watching this. I'm like, oh my God, that is the Usos. They were doing all that before they did their gimmick shift.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you Miz and Mizdow coming out. And I forgot about, I didn't forget about El Torito, but I forgot about how the Los Matadores were. And then Goldust and Stardust come out too.
Yeah. You know, the Usos are such a weird case because they did this gimmick and it got kind of stale for a while. And then, you know, last year around WrestleMania, we were all convinced that they were gone. They're still around, still doing their thing. And
it's weird about the Usos because they've always been good. It's just that the gimmick just was kind of stale.
Yeah.
Like they've always been this good, but you know, it was a case where they needed to just refresh.
And they did.
Yeah.
Hopefully these tag belts are terrible.
Oh, they're awful. Oh,
terrible.
The freaking pennies were awful.
Yeah. But the thing that does stand out is people thinking that, you know, Sandow is the guy here. And I mean, the Mizdow stuff was fun, but, you know, you look at who's the biggest star from this match, it probably is Miz, right? I mean,
oh yeah, easily.
Obviously, Goldust is what he is, but I think in terms of star power, I mean, Miz main evented at WrestleMania. But
yeah, it's definitely the Miz at this point. I do find it interesting that what do we have? 5 out of the 8 are no longer with the company anymore. So I think it's just the Miz and the Usos, right?
Are Primo and Epico?
Everybody else is gone.
Did they ever actually?
I think so. I think they have a pro wrestling team. I think they have a pro wrestling tee store now.
Yeah, because I know.
So I'm pretty sure they're gone.
Yeah, I guess they are. Because I know they were able to work in Puerto Rico even when they were still with the company. Yeah, I guess they. I think they got cut.
Yeah. I think they got cut with everybody. I'm pretty sure WWE got those Puerto Rico tapes and they were done.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I mean, it was a good match. You know, there was a while that pretty much every pay-per-view was opening with a tag match to get the people going.
Yep.
And this actually right around the time that the New Day were getting ready to debut as well.
But they held off because of
They did hold off because this was actually the night before the Ferguson grand jury stuff got announced.
Yeah.
And
the whole thing, too. Yeah.
So yeah.
They held off on the New Day for a few more weeks.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So Miz blind tags one of the Usos, and Miz Dow blind tags Miz, pins Goldust, and wins the tag titles. That was fun. We move on. Larry the Cable Guy is guest hosting Raw tomorrow night. I'm sure I watched this. I don't remember it.
I definitely watched it because I wanted to see what was going to happen because the next day I flew to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
This was the start of Thanksgiving break. But yeah, I have no recollection of Larry the Cable Guy being on that Raw.
Yeah.
But I do remember the Stone Cold podcast with Vince McMahon that they advertised. Mostly because it had a Punk question, and it was like right after
the
podcast launched.
Came out like the night after or the night before Thanksgiving.
Yep,
the Cabana
exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's a hell of a week.
Yeah,
it's a hell of a week. It's a hell of a week, and you know, these certain things made me think certain things later on in the show. Mm-hmm. But let's move on forward here.
Adam Rose and the Rosebuds, including Sarah Logan.
Yeah.
I
didn't recognize any of the other
I didn't recognize anybody else. But Sarah Logan stood out like a sore thumb.
Plenty of action figures. Slater and Titus come up, and Adam Rose challenges them to a match with him and the Easter Bunny. Was it Easter Bunny?
No, it was just the Bunny.
Yeah.
Just the Bunny.
So next we get 4-on-4 Survivor Series elimination tag match between Paige, Cameron, Summer Rae, Layla against Natalya, Naomi, Emma, and Alicia Fox, and God bless them, they tried. It just...
they tried.
Also, Brandy was ring announcing.
Yeah, Brandy was ring announcing. Yeah.
I mean, you could come into it and you knew it was going to be kind of rough, and then they just leave him out there for 15 minutes.
Just...
Yeah. The time to the first elimination was just way too long. It took forever to get somebody out of there.
I have to imagine that, you know, at around this point, this was bad, but there had to have been some sort of movement within the people in this division when they were seeing what was happening in NXT. Just keep in mind, we're 6 months removed from that Charlotte Natalya match at TakeOver, which had certainly, you know, move the standard up from the Paige Emma match that happened at Arrival back in February, and we're 2 months removed from the Charlotte Bailey match from TakeOver Fatal 4-Way, one that was quite good. And given just, you know, the composition of the match, they probably were trying to, you know, make it go long, you know, seem like they were giving it some sort of weight here, but it just didn't work. And it's unfortunate because it's not, you know, it's I don't really think it's anyone's fault in particular. It's just I don't know if they were quite seasoned yet to make this sort of thing happen or this sort of thing work.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, not to.
But also, I think it's sort of just a cultural thing here because, you know, they weren't. It's sort of nature versus nurture. Also, they weren't cultivated to be doing these types of long matches with the women yet, and the coaching and the producing wasn't there yet. While it was there down there.
Well, and I understand. You know, there's some negative connotations to this, but this is also kind of the Total Divas match. You know.
Yeah.
Book this.
Yeah.
Like, have something for the show.
Yeah. That's a fair point because most of the cast at this point was, you know, from this match.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say most of it. Some of it was. Some of it was. Because I know Natalya was. I know Naomi was. Emma was not. Alicia probably made sporadic appearances or cameos. Summer Rae was kind of featured. Cameron was.
I think Paige was getting into it.
Paige was not there yet. She was not there yet. Paige joined later, and I remember it being a thing because, you know, people were calling her a sellout or whatever. But yeah, because she was marketed as the anti-diva or whatever.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I mean, it wasn't very good. No. You know, Cole brought up Jerry Lawler's Survivor Series teams. He had no idea what Cole was talking about.
I think he was trying to think of the Knights, and then he was like, oh yeah, I did have that one with the little person match.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I think he got taken aback by.
I mean, they made Naomi look good.
They did.
Yeah, that was my thing. She definitely shined at the end, and especially getting to eliminate Paige was probably the biggest thing for her.
Yeah. So Naomi and I think Natalya were the survivors.
No, it was a clean sweep. No. It was a clean sweep.
I did fast.
No.
Most of it. So.
Yeah. No. It was.
Now, is this like one of the times where Naomi gets injured? Because isn't she? I know, like a while back, she got I think her eye injury that like delayed the push. I might be mixing up times.
I don't know because I know that obviously she's not featured for a while after this.
Well, no, she apparently gets involved with the Usos feud with the Miz in December.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's what happens. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yes.
I had no recollection of that until you just said it. Like.
Yep.
No.
Okay. Yep. I just remember that whole deal. Yeah. You're right.
They definitely seemed like I thought maybe she was going to be like next in line because it seemed like they really put her over here that she would be next.
Yeah. Because what ends up happening? Well, we'll get to that later. That later.
And the only thing I liked too was Tyson Kidd. I love yes. Tyson Kidd, especially at this point in time, the Natty's husband chance. I love that, but his work in NXT was so good. Like
so
they
good.
Just did that four-way, that fatal four-way match, and I just remember his promo that night where it was like he's talking all about like you think he's talking about the other competitors, and he's just talking about himself the whole time. He's so good, so underrated. Okay. I got to revisit that NXT run again though.
Then we go to Dean Ambrose against Bray Wyatt.
You know, in hindsight, there are obviously reasons to be excited for this, just because of what we were thinking, the perceptions were at the time. But my God, this match was just perfectly, aggressively fine.
Again, it was pretty much every match either guy had ever had.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
You've seen a Bray Wyatt match?
Yeah.
You've seen this one. You've seen a Dean Ambrose match? You've seen this one.
You've seen this one.
You know, Bray.
Yeah, I had no notes on this one. No notes.
No.
There's nothing to write. Like it is what it is. Like if you like these guys, you're gonna like it. If you don't care about them, you're not gonna care about this match.
And it's just the TLC match, which I remember being pretty good. But
because wasn't that the one with the explosion when did that happen? Because when did that happen? There was definitely something that happened.
Actually, that might because
I'm confused to one timeline.
Because I know they main evented. So that
yeah, happened. That because I'm fairly certain that that was what happened in that match.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dean forgot to unplug the monitor.
Yeah. Yeah, it exploded. Yeah, it was dumb as hell.
Yeah. That was bad. But yeah, so Bray wins by DQ because he tells Dean to hit him with the chair, and Dean does it.
So, okay, at this point, we've had matches of 15 minutes and 25 seconds, 14 minutes and 35 seconds, and 14 minutes. The next two matches go a combined 3 minutes and 3 seconds.
Yeah, see, well, you could have cut one match entirely in terms of having Adam Rose and the Bunny face Slater and Titus, yeah. Which, you know, the Bunny gets the win. Justin Gabriel working his second match of the night. He worked a pre-show because he was still in the company in 2014.
Sure was.
It
was with Tyson Kidd in NXT also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you cut 5 minutes off the Survivor Series women's match. You know, you cut a couple minutes off Bray and Dean, and then AJ and Nikki can go, you know, longer than 30 seconds that it goes. You know, Nikki gets the win in 30 seconds after Bree kisses AJ, and I get what they're going for. You know, a callback to the Bryan and Sheamus thing. It makes sense. I get it. It's kind of dumb, but I get what they're going for. And I'll turn it over to you.
No. Chris, if you have thoughts on this, you know,
The only thing I didn't understand was because wasn't the whole thing Brie was like Nikki's personal servant pretty much for like,
yep,
for whatever match
for 30 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. 30 days. So like she does this because she's now still, you know, her sister. Like that was the thing that peeved me a little bit. It just didn't make sense to me.
It's getting revenge on AJ for costing Brian the title, I'm telling you.
Oh man.
That's what it is.
It's an interesting way to do it, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. All I wanted to know, like, I got to get, so I want to hear Chris's take on it, but then I also want to hear, like, Rob, like, I want confirmation from Rob about, like, what actually happened in the arena after this went down.
Okay, so let me, so for anyone who's listening to this who knows me, you know that I'm a huge Bayley fan. You know that I'm always on Twitter posting about Bayley and my fandom for her, and it's quite large. And obviously, I'm obviously going to, you know, not deny that. Before Bayley came around, however, you know, we're 2 months removed from her match with Charlotte at Fatal 4-Way, the one that really kind of lit the match for me for that one, for that fandom. I was a huge AJ fan. She was what I was for Bayley back then, although instead of tweeting, I was posting on forums and whatnot. And you know, this wasn't the first time that I had seen AJ. This was the first time, however, that I'd seen her compete in a big match, because if I recall correctly, she was at Survivor Series 2011 in the women's 5-on-5 match, and she was also at Survivor Series 2012 in the stupid ongoing storyline with Cena and Vicky Guerrero, and Tamina for some reason was involved in that, that nonsense that I would choose to forget as much as I can. So, you know, at this point in time, you know, we're a few months removed from her return after, you know, her honeymoon with Punk. And, you know, I'm pretty happy, you know, I'm pretty happy that I get to see this. I have some high-ish expectations, even though the matches with Paige didn't really blow anything out of the water, even though there were high expectations for them by wrestling fans who were fans of both. And, you know, I'm just sitting there and I'm just, you know, hoping to root on AJ in this match. You know, I had said to myself, you know, maybe she loses, whatever. It is what it is. I'll be upset, but, you know, that's just the fandom. Then Brie kisses AJ, and I'm like, okay, what the hell is that? And then, you know, Nikki comes over, puts her in the, you know, the rack attack, and then drops her 1, 2, 3, 33 seconds later, gets the win on the Divas Championship, and I'm pretty much just sitting there like, what the fuck just happened? And I'm like, I'll be honest, you know, at this point in time, I had my favorites. I had, you know, but I wouldn't really say I had anything, like, really strong. At this point, you know, AJ, I had something strong for her in terms of my fandom, and I'm just sitting there. I'm, like, stewing. I'm, like, legitimately mad. And at that point in time, you know, yeah, we had the main event to come, and, you know, there were rumors, you know, going all over about, you know, what could happen at the end of the show, and I just wanted to leave. I wanted to leave the arena. I wanted to go to the hotel and that we were staying at, so that I could, you know, just get my sleep and get ready for the flight back home to New Jersey at that point. I was pissed. I'd never, and even to this day, even seeing some things that have happened to Bayley, you know, live and in person, because I went from TakeOver Brooklyn the first time around all the way to, Jesus Christ, the SmackDown at the Garden last year without seeing her actually win a match. And that included the chicanery at WrestleMania 35. That just kind of left me like, what the hell just happened? My brain, like, broke. But this was, like, I was pissed. Well, I wanted to leave. I didn't care.
Sometimes your favorites lose.
I understand that, but I didn't care. I wanted to go home. Like, I wanted to leave the arena. I'd never felt that way before, but it was just, like,
yeah, no.
I even said, like, oh, at that point, I had just lost all hope. I was not optimistic about anything. I didn't think Sting was going to show up. I didn't think The Undertaker was going to show up. I said it was going to be Randy Orton, and it was going to disappoint me. Even though everyone in St. Louis was, like, you know, going to root for Orton, but I was like, no, it's just going to be Orton. No, we're not going to see Sting now for the first time ever.
Yeah,
and I was about as pessimistic as I've ever been in my life at that point in time.
Yeah, you were real upset. You know, you hadn't come around to Nikki Bella yet.
I was
people to come around on her.
I've done a mea culpa on that, but at that point in time, no, I was a hater, strong hater.
No, again, kind of like I said, you know, they could have added a couple minutes to this match from other matches, but I get it too. And, you know, clearly AJ was taking some more time off.
The only other thing is too, I just don't know. They weren't short on time. Like, I'm looking at the card.
Yeah.
They're only at like 2 hours, like not even two they, hours.
It's they
like
have their hour. Own network.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even without the network, the match times are only going, you're only at an hour 35 in match time.
The last
one. I mean, I wonder, because well,
that's with the last one. That's with the last one.
Okay.
Because the last one's going to go 45, but you have only 45 in the other three, and then you got like 5 minutes here, so... They weren't hurting on time unless they bought like so little, you know, satellite time for the pay-per-view market.
Well, I mean, let's see, because they opened with the 20-minute authority thing, and then they did have
an interview. Oh, that's true.
They had the interview with Roman via satellite that took some time. We didn't talk about that in between the Adam Rose match and this match.
So honestly, you could have kept all the match times, but just take away 10 minutes from your opening promo. That didn't need to happen.
Yeah. I can't remember if they said that they got their time cut from this match and this is what they had to do.
I think it's in AJ's book that they did, I want to say.
It sounds like it's true.
It definitely happened to them one time.
Yeah.
I think it was probably...
But she didn't even get time off at this point because she came back. Well, because at the time, my thinking was, oh, she's probably done. Because of what happened with Punk, and we're only five, the wound is still fresh. No, and I'm thinking like
you weren't wrong.
I wasn't necessarily wrong, but I thought that this was just, you know, she was done, and this was how they were doing her on her way out, and I was just pissed. Yeah. I was just pissed about it, and you know, and the Punk podcast a few days later only made me think like, oh, okay, what is this gonna happen? Because then they ended up facing each other at TLC. And that was the match where they had the stupid aerosol can sprayed in her face, the hairspray that led to the finito, final part of the match.
Yeah. Well,
it's just real stupid.
It was kind of dumb. I mean, there were other ways to do this, but, you know.
Just have them work a match.
Yeah. But you did think it would be Orton.
I did think it would be Orton. I did. I was pissed. I was heated.
Well, then it is time for the main event. Team Cena, featuring John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Ryback, Rowan, and Big Show, against Team Authority, Seth Rollins, Rusev, Mark Henry, Kane, and Luke Harper. You know, you look at those teams on paper, the Authority have a big advantage.
They do. They do.
They don't have Ryback on their team, or Eric Rowan.
Yeah, very true.
People love Dolph Ziggler here.
I love Dolph Ziggler at this point in time. Like, I was pretty fresh to, like, returning because of the network. Mm-hmm. And I definitely will say I was a big Dolph fan. I thought they should have pushed him to the moon after this because, I mean, I was definitely wrong, but...
So were we.
I definitely was one of those people.
So were we. Let's not act like we weren't.
It felt like this, after this match, was the time to do something with
it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they didn't.
Let's not act like we weren't.
No, we were.
We were. We were one of those people who were making him one of the most over in his entire career. We were absolutely cheering for him. No question about it.
So Triple H is hyping up Mark Henry, and Big Show just walks over, hits the knockout punch, gets the elimination right away.
That's such a great elimination. Like, it's so good.
Just an early lead for Team Cena. Seth curb stomps Ryback a little bit later. Well, he's not the legal man, but Rusev is, and the referee's back is turned. Rusev gets the pin.
I love Cole shouting at the referee to get some control.
it's a very constant in the Survivor Series.
The ref
having no control what's going on.
Yeah.
It's just really funny because Cole is just pissed off at the referee.
Rusev goes to splash Dolph through the table. Dolph moves. Rusev gets counted out.
He'd not been pinned or submitted yet. He just won the U.S. title on the network's like after show that they were like, they decided to air.
That's like one of the few times they've ever done that too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still to this day.
Yeah. Still to this day. And yeah, so Rusev, that's a great elimination.
Yeah.
It's a great elimination.
And obviously he'll face John Cena and lose there. And apparently was treated like shit for years.
You mean abused?
Yeah,
abused. The word is abused.
And now he's Kip Sabin's friend that likes to play video games.
Yeah, instead of coming out and just in tanks, he likes to sit behind a game console.
mm. Seth comes in and takes down Eric Rowan, and Harper hits him with a lariat, gets the cover there, so we're back to 3-3. Big Show turns.
There's a shock.
hits Cena with the knockout punch, and Seth pins Cena. And I remember being pretty surprised by that, like Cena going out relatively early.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of felt like he was going to be the last guy, but, you know. Big Not Show leaves. So Dolph Ziggler is in a three-on-one situation here.
Indeed.
Between Kane, Seth, and Harper.
So one thing, too, wasn't – so mind you, I've had to, like, go back and watch certain things. So, like, Big Show, wasn't there, like, a story where he had, like, a contract that was, like, ironclad that he can't be fired or whatnot?
Yeah.
Like, wasn't that a big part of the thing? So, like, why would you even turn? Like, who cares if you win or lose?
You know, yeah. I mean – that's a good question. I don't
yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting you to have the answer. Not, I mean, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's certain logical things that, I mean, maybe there is an answer out there, but
yeah,
I couldn't find one off the top of my head.
The crowd did start chanting for Randy Orton at this point to come help Dolph.
I was probably annoyed.
I mean, if they were to do it, you know, have the refs back to turn and have like Orton RKO or whatever for an elimination, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ziggler takes out Kane with the zigzag. Harper tries to pin Dolph a couple times, can't get him to three, and then Dolph rolls him up, and we're down to Ziggler against Rollins.
Yep.
Ziggler hits a zigzag on him. Triple H pulls the ref out of the ring.
He sure does.
And then Triple H and Jamie Noble and
Jody Mercury
beat up Ziggler for a little bit. Ziggler takes him out. It's another zigzag, but there's no ref. Another ref comes out.
Triple H beats him up.
Yeah. And then Triple H finally gets the upper hand on Ziggler, hits Pedigree, puts Seth on top of Dolph, and authority referee Scott Armstrong comes running out.
Yeah. The comic guy, Michael Cole, is like, oh, it's Scott Armstrong.
Yeah.
Crooked official.
Which that was something I noticed in the arena.
I remember you. That out. Yeah.
Scott Armstrong goes one, two, and the lights go out, and you're a crow.
At that point, I am probably elated as hell. Because here comes Sting for the first time.
Which, I assume they own his WCW music, so they probably should have just used that, because his theme is not very good.
It's not good.
They might not own the WCW theme music, because there's a lot of them I don't think they own that I think, like, Jimmy Hart wrote.
Yeah.
Fair.
Plus, they can't use... They obviously... Well, maybe they could have. They can't use Seek and Destroy.
Yeah,
I mean, Triple H obviously is buddy-buddy with Metallica. If only their money was as long as it is now, where they can use freaking Blinding Lights and War Pigs for their theme songs and takeovers.
Sting hits the ring and hits the Scorpion Death Drop on Triple H and pulls Ziggler on top of Rollins, and the original ref gets back in for the three count. Dolph Ziggler is your sole survivor.
Two things. One, there was a lot of people who, you know, were like, oh, They debuted Sting in the crowd, you know. Did they know what was going on? Like, St. Louis is a heavy wrestling market, so I'm sure that they probably knew.
Well, let me tell you, in the building, yes, people knew who Sting was.
Yeah,
you know,
they did. Yeah. But yeah, people were like, oh, the pop wasn't big enough. Like,
it was.
It was big.
Yeah.
It was big.
They don't always come across on TV.
No. And second off, I kind of get it, but looking back, like, God, Triple H and Sting stalled for so long.
They did.
Why was that even necessary?
They just kind of stared at each other for a little bit.
Seth and Dolph are out for like the longest time ever.
Yeah. They could nap. It's like, and that part was just kind of, it didn't ruin the match for me at all, but my God, like, geez, like, just get on with it.
Yeah.
Hit the Scorpion Death Drop already.
And then it sets up their WrestleMania match, which is good.
It's
good, care.
Yeah. It's a good match. It's a barrel of fun.
Yeah, that was Survivor Series, and we do have a couple things about Sting from the Observer.
Go right ahead.
Most likely, Sting will do one WWE match at WrestleMania, probably against Triple H. The Rock said that he signed to do a movie in the spring, so it wouldn't be him. Sting said he wanted to face Undertaker at WrestleMania, but if that's not possible, his choice would be Triple H. A decade ago, Rock wanted a match with Sting, figuring Sting and Savage were two dream matches left, and then Savage passed away.
Mm.
If the match goes well, Sting could do another match.
Which he does.
He does, but
that doesn't go well.
He does. No. Yeah, that doesn't go well though. Yeah.
Well, actually, technically, he has two more matches because he faces Big Show.
Oh yeah.
On Labor Day, I believe. Big Nitro.
His only win.
Yeah, his only win. Yeah. The big Nitro style main event right there.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Sting and Undertaker probably wouldn't have been the right choice here anyway.
But would it have?
Actually, well, Undertaker,
think about it for a second.
It wouldn't have been the right choice when Undertaker still had the streak, I don't think. But he didn't have it at this.
He didn't have it. But then, and he only faced.
Well, this is post streak. This is Bray. Yeah, this is Bray. Yeah,
Bray, like.
But they probably could have done it here.
They should have. That would have been a bigger attraction than that.
Where
you did Sting and Triple H? They're two old guys.
Well, yeah, but
again, this is post streak Taker. Just do it. You had him come back.
Well,
just
they had
do
their
it.
Chance either the well,
because Bray Taker is a nothing match. They didn't even do anything in the follow up for that. Bray didn't even get his win back.
Yeah,
they did nothing to follow that up for. They showed up, if they were just gonna do a one off, just do that.
You know, the moment to do the Sting Undertaker match was
2011. Yeah, and they didn't do it.
Was that the second? Triple
that was the
H
first.
Match?
Well, yeah, it was the second. Yeah, it was the second.
Technically
the second. Yeah.
Triple H match where, you know, they did those vignettes and it looked like it was going to be for Sting and they just had him be for The Undertaker instead.
That's what they said it was for Sting, but they couldn't get him, so they changed it to The Undertaker.
Yeah. The fact Sting stepped into a WWE ring was not a shock. Those in WWE had talked for years, expecting it was inevitable, but TNA would always match the offer, and Sting was a loyal guy.
Yeah, he was.
TNA, you mean Spike TV on that one.
Yeah.
But absence makes one bigger, as shown by the response to Ultimate Warrior and the DVD sales for Bill Goldberg, plus Sting was in the video game, and for a few years, if you were in the video game, that was your path to coming back. I mean,
oh yeah,
for pretty much everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
That's how they started.
Yeah.
That's how Angle came back.
Yeah, that's how Angle came back. So Goldberg came back.
Bruno,
yeah.
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 So, I don't know. I mean, also having it be the first, you know, free show, quote-unquote, free trial show on the WWE Network, you know, you bring in something big like this, probably the way.
And you have the match be what it was. I mean, that's a great way to sell the network.
Yeah. So, I thought it was pretty cool with Sting coming in. Definitely a big moment, and kind of caps off the show, kind of another one-match show, which 2001 was kind of as well, but these two five-on-five matches are very similar to each other, kind of like we talked about, and I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is Survivor Series 2014. Our next project, we are... going down south.
We are. We're going to do some Starcade shows.
Yeah, in honor of it being December.
Indeed.
I don't think we have our shows locked up yet. I know we're doing 1997. I don't know what other ones we're doing, but don't know when we're going to record them. Probably closer to the holiday. But yeah, stay tuned for that. And yeah, we'll have a lot of fun. I think we'll probably do Royal Rumbles in January. And yeah, it'll be good stuff.
Very much so. So, Chris, you want to once again remind the people where they can find you? The floor is yours.
Oh, sure. I always have a blast doing these. You can find me at Hitmen99 on Twitter.
Indeed. So you can follow the Barber's Chair at Barber's Chair Net. You can subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/thebarber'schair. Let me see if I got that right, actually. Okay. It is okay. So it's patreon.com/barber'schairnet. And, you know, you can find all the podcasts available to you there. There's a new, also, you can find them on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud. There's a new episode, of course, of the 2-Minute Drill that's out. New episode of Summer Sessions dropped recently. 79th in House, as well as Random Acts of Podcast and A New Cinema with the Guys as they continue to go over The Sopranos. And also, announcement, I did not say this on the Ruthless Aggression podcast last time or any time else, but I did announce it earlier today and last night. The WWE Top 25 is coming back. I'm a madman for whatever reason, and I'm doing this again. In case you forgot, it's where I track all of the WWE wrestlers on every single television show besides Main Event, and all network events, and grade them on their matches and create a ranking system for them. It's going to be a lot of fun, I'm sure, very engaging and very time-consuming and taxing, and hopefully nothing disrupts it like what happened back in March. Fingers crossed for that. But since all systems are a go, I felt, you know, why not do it? Yeah, so you can follow Rob, of course, at RobertO'Neill31. You can follow me at Chris M. Novak. We will be back with the Ruthless Aggression podcast later this week to talk about the aftermath of Survivor Series and predict what's going to happen on Takeover War Games. We will chat you later with Starcade episodes next month.